Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Generations, the seventh film in the Star Trek film franchise. We're joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
Good. I'm very excited to talk about the character crossover that everyone's been waiting for when Chekhov met Guinan.
Yeah, and the daughter of Sulu makes a prominent appearance. Yeah. We got everything that people would want from the original series coming back for this movie.
Yep.
But guys, if you are unfamiliar with the show, you're just tuning in because you like Star Trek TNG and you like the movies more than anything else. This is a Star Trek podcast where we've been running through TNG, TOS, now the TOS movies we just finished up. So we're moving on to Star Trek Generations, which is the first of the Star Trek films, the seventh of the Star Trek films overall, was the first one to feature the cast of the Next Generation.
Our significant others have left us.
Yep.
And we are now alone to focus on Star Trek the way we couldn't before.
Well,
we
Clay,
were hassled by social constructs and, you know, relationships of any kind.
I always knew that I'd podcast alone, Clay. So, anyway, in this film, Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise D teams up with his predecessor, Captain James T. Kirk, to stop a villain from destroying a planet. That description is the Wikipedia description, and its blandness might be a key to this film, I think. But anyway, before we get into it, Clay, did you want to talk about how did you feel just coming back into the Next Generation cast before we kick off this episode?
I was very happy to see them. I wasn't sure if it was going to really have an effect on me, but actually having spent so much time recently watching the TOS movies and the TOS show, the transition from the beginning into the TNG stuff actually did make me happy. I was glad to see everybody.
There's a lot of things that didn't change in my rewatch of this one. One thing that did change is, besides the realization that this came out only 2 years after Undiscovered Country, which is crazy.
Oh, wow.
I think it's 2 years, because Undiscovered...
I was actually wondering that. I didn't look it up, but I was wondering.
I'm pretty sure Undiscovered is 92. So, mm-hmm. Either way, it's like 2 or 3 years. And watching the TOS stuff into this one made me appreciate the handoff that the film is more than mm-hmm. anything, but we'll get into that right after this. So I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back, and we're going to break down Star Trek Generations.
I must have jumped that 50 times. Scared the hell out of me each time, except this time, because it isn't real.
Antonia.
She isn't real either, is she? Nothing here is. Nothing here matters.
You know, maybe this isn't about an empty house. Maybe it's about that empty chair on the bridge of the Enterprise. Ever since I left Starfleet, I haven't made a difference.
Captain of the Enterprise.
That's right.
Close to retirement?
I'm not planning on it.
Let me tell you something. Don't. Don't let them promote you. Don't let them transfer you. Don't let them do anything that takes you off the bridge of that ship, because while you're there, you can make a difference.
Come back with me. Help me stop Sodom. Make a difference again.
Who am I to argue with the captain of the Enterprise? What's the name of that planet? Viridian 3?
Yes.
I take it the odds are against us and the situation is grim.
You could say that.
You know, if Spock were here, he'd say that I was an irrational, illogical human being for taking on a mission like that. Sounds like fun.
Thank you.
All right, Clay. So I wanted to start this off with a story time. So in 1994, I would have been 11 or 12, depending on when this came out. And I had been a big Star Trek The Next Generation fan. I had watched all the episodes. My grandfather got me into it, which is the point of the podcast, kind of. So as a big Star Trek fan, I was upset that the show was no longer going to be on, but I was very excited for a movie. I remember my grandmother took me to the downtown Worcester movie theater, which no longer exists. And we went at like the matinee because that's when grandparents take you to the movies. And I sat through the movie. And I distinctly remember being 12 years old or 11 or whatever I was. When I walked out of the movie, I distinctly remember the feeling of being, is that it? When I walked out. And it's like the first movie I can ever really remember leaving from at that, like at that age or whatever. And just going, wow, that wasn't really anything. And it's especially weird for something that I was so into at the time. So the movie couldn't even capture 11-year-old Wes's hearts and minds, and I don't think it managed to hold on to 33-year-old Wes's hearts and minds, but I guess we'll see how the podcast goes.
Yeah, that's interesting because I could see myself. I don't know if I saw this in the theater. I don't think that I did. Maybe I did. I don't remember. But I probably would have loved it. My taste was not really refined at that point.
Sure.
I do remember the first movie. This is not Star Trek related, but the first movie I had that feeling about was Batman and Robin.
Oh, sure.
You know, being a big comics. And even then I was like, well, it was cool to see Mr. Freeze.
Yep.
Right?
What year did that come out?
It was, Mr. Freeze was good, right?
Yeah. Poison Ivy's there.
I want to say 96-ish.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably
97 maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I kind of have a soft spot for this movie.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I watched it a lot when I was... I must have had it taped or something. Because I think I used to watch this a lot. I honestly can't remember. It's been a long time since I've watched it proper.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I didn't... Yeah, it's kind of... It's fine, I guess. Having gone back and watched more of the show consistently than I think I probably ever had, and being fairly familiar with the way the show feels, this just kind of feels like a big episode of the show, like a big, you know, not pretty good episode of the show.
Yep.
For better or worse. Like, it actually kind of threw me a little bit about halfway through when they cut to the exterior shot of the ship and did, like, one of those... captain's log transition things, because they do not do that in the movies,
right? Yeah.
And for him to do that in this thing really is like, oh, clearly this is just, I mean, it was written by the guys who wrote the show, so it's written like an episode of the show, kind of. It has all the trappings of an episode of the show.
Yep.
Including Troy not being very good at her job.
Deanna, take the helm.
Or again, she's supposed to be an empath, she's supposed to be mildly telepathic. She sits down with Picard, who's clearly
crying.
Emotionally yep. distraught. She's like, so what's going on,
yeah.
buddy? Is there something wrong? It seems like there might be something wrong. As he's weeping over his dead family.
You think she'd pick up on that one. I think that the a good way to start talking about this is that I would agree that this is probably my most watched of all the Star Trek movies. I've seen this one many, many times. And I think a good way to start off is that the commentary is done by Brennan Braga and Ron Moore, who wrote the movie and were writers on TNG for a lot of the seasons. And the audio commentary from those two is basically them apologizing for the movie, just saying that this is not what they wanted. This is not the way that they expected it to go. They think it's probably one of the worst things that they've done for the show. Mm-hmm. And
well,
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I was just going to say there's a certain art to these handoff movies, you know,
yeah.
or handoff stories, because usually it's you have to find a convoluted enough reason to put these people together to begin with. Like, imagine if it's not a giant cast. Like, let's Doctor Who does it every handful of years. They do a multiple Doctor show, and it's always very convoluted how they put them together. But now you've got entire crews that you have to figure out how to weasel in. So, like, that's so many more people to consider as far as screen time, you know, egos, what part they're going to play in the story, how to actually make something that works in the world and doesn't feel, even though it's convoluted, it's as convoluted as little as possible, and it's hard to thread that needle.
Yeah,
and I think they did an okay job. I don't know, like I think honestly, okay. I think this movie, the reputation of this movie, would be 100 times better if two things happened. Well, three things, but one of them is related to the another one. First one, if they had put Kirk, somehow got Kirk onto the new Enterprise.
Yeah.
Two, if his death had been better.
Yeah.
Specifically, if they had not used that shot, that upward shot of
where he tumbles off like a toboggan. Yeah, yeah.
That's a really, really bad shot. I don't know why they shot that. But aside from, like, his actual death scene, I actually think is pretty good. I think I like the way Shatner plays it. I like his last words. I think it's fairly understated.
Yeah.
I wish there had been more. I think that's the thing missing, is there's not enough Kirk. But see, that's the problem, because Kirk is supposed to have been dead 80 years ago. You can't bring him onto the Enterprise, because otherwise everyone's going to know he's not dead. You know, so yes. It's kind of the thing where it's like you're trying to retcon stuff. You're trying to change stuff without changing anything, and that's very difficult to do. So it's a shame they couldn't have got him onto the Enterprise, because I think that would have really
picked things up.
Yeah, I think so.
That's kind of a trend along the movies. They don't like to have people on the bridge when stuff is going. Like, whenever big events happen, they don't seem in the movies to like having people on the ship for mm-hmm. them, for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
One of the funny things that from watching this that I thought this past watch where we've watched the TOS movies beforehand, I actually think that the TOS stuff is better than the TNG stuff in a lot of ways. Like the opening scene on the Enterprise B feels to me much more like it's from the original series than the Star Trek Next Generation crew does feel in their movie. Does that make
really?
Sense?
Okay.
I feel like they wrote it better, and the Next Generation stuff feels like the writing is a little bit off to me for some mm-hmm. reason, and I don't know why.
Well, I think part of it might be because even in the TOS stuff, they're continuing the theme that they've done for six movies, which is, you know, shit, it sucks to get old.
Yeah.
And they try to continue that into, like, I thought of this as I was watching it. I was like, well, apparently when you make it to the Star Trek movies, your character motivation is shit, it sucks to get old, because they were doing the same thing with Picard,
right?
It's like, you know,
yeah,
he's being very reflective about what he didn't do with his life, et cetera. You know, it's like that's the only thing they know how to do when they get to the movies, because it's been so long that they are old.
Well, that's the funny thing. The TOS movies make sense that that's a plot line, right? This movie
yeah.
came out like 2 months after the show had ended. So
right, right.
The aging doesn't. It's one of the big problems, I think, with the movie is that they're trying to sell this theme of aging. And I guess I want to talk about this, and it doesn't really work well, but you'd listed a couple things you would have done to improve this. I
yep.
would, like, this is going to be a big thing because it's changing basically the entire movie, but to fix this movie, I think you seriously have to rewrite Sorin and the Nexus to make sense. And mm-hmm. because to me, this movie is bad because it's very confused about what it's talking about.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, it's about basically a continuation of the TOS movies about getting old and time passing you by, except in the TOS movies, time passing you by is literally about them getting older. In this one, they're taking more of like a sci-fi angle where it's literally about time travel.
Right.
And what they're trying to do is they're trying to say time passes you by. Time is like the centerpiece of this. Sorin has like 17 different lines that he mentions the importance of time about. He says time at least 50 times in this movie.
It is not only the predator that stalks us, but also the fire in which we burn.
when I was younger, I didn't realize that was a line from a poem, and I thought it was a really badass line that they had written. But
oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a poem. I think that the time thing is unfortunate because Soren is supposed to be about this time thing. He's trying to get back to a time that he wants to get back to. And he does it through the Nexus. And the aging thing, you know, Kirk is always scared about getting old. He's now at a point where he's officially been replaced as captain of the Enterprise, so time is passing by. Picard is scared.
Replaced by a fucking chump.
Yeah, replaced by someone I can't understand getting there. Picard is, his family's dying. He feels alone. Time is passing him by, right? Mm-hmm. The problem here is that they try to link everything through the Nexus, which doesn't really have anything to do with time. It's just about a place that you're perfectly happy in. And I think that you fix the movie by what the Nexus does is that it brings you back to a real time where you were happy, not like mm-hmm. a fake imaginary holodeck type thing.
Not like the Dickensian England of 2027 or whenever this takes place. It's,
you know what I mean? Like if Soren's whole thing was about he's trying to manipulate time. And the Nexus brings Picard back to a time where he's with his family, and this is all very happy. It actually gives you real stakes to want to leave the Nexus, because as it stands, there's no reason to want to stay there, because he realizes immediately that it's all fake.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk, on the other hand, actually apparently gets sent back to a time that is what he experienced, except it's not the real time. And I think that the movie would have been stronger if it was all about the time travel aspect of getting back to the time that you were happiest and realizing that time passes you by as part of life, and that causes them to go back to like their mission again.
Right, right.
They don't really do that. It all feels very hodgepodge to me about what the Nexus is. Soren is maybe the most poorly utilized villain out of all the movies, I think, that I've seen. Did you have any sort of feedback against everything that I was just talking about?
Well, the Nexus is the one of the clunkiest things I've ever seen. I shouldn't say that, but like the mechanics of the Nexus are very, very clunky.
Yes.
But at the same time, whatever, I don't really care.
Yeah.
Like it's one of those things where it's like, I understand what they're doing. I don't know if it's, you know, like you're saying, I don't know if it's exactly hitting the thematic mark the way that they want it to, but it's the giant snow monster from Star Trek 2009. It's what gets you to old man Spock,
right?
Or in this case, you know, Kirk. And I don't know, it that is definitely the weakest link in here. I don't know, I think I probably agree with you that if they had, but so you're saying actually physically bring you back in time to a specific point?
Yes, to be in, basically it's a time travel device. And so Soren would be interested in using it to get back to when his family was still alive. And
okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think that makes more sense, because like what's otherwise Soren's motivation is really kind of whack.
He just wants to be happy. And you never see his Nexus vision.
Yeah.
So you don't. It seems that he just wants to selfishly be happy, as opposed to any sort of ulterior motives.
His Nexus could be like a strip club in Montreal.
Right. Exactly.
I see what you're saying. But yeah, if he's actually trying to get back to a point where he can possibly save his family or something like that, that would, yeah, I think that would be a much stronger motivation for everybody involved in that case.
And I think that you talked about the mechanics of the Nexus don't make sense. It's another thing that if you think about the Nexus too much, it completely falls apart. Like,
yeah,
they at the opening, right, the ships are stuck in the Nexus. Guinan's refugee people are stuck in the thing. The ships blow up. Kirk's ship gets blown up, and Kirk gets sucked into the Nexus. They say later on that you can't fly. They try to get around the fact of, like, why does Soren have to do this convoluted plan? Why can't he just fly a ship into it?
Right.
And they say that ships have been destroyed, which is true. But my understanding of what's going on is that when the ship is exploded, you get sucked into the Nexus.
Yeah, that seems to be the way it goes, yeah.
So why can't he fly a ship into it and just like shoot himself out the, you know, in a spacesuit, shoot himself out the door into the Nexus and go into it?
Or, like, you know, load himself into a torpedo like they did with Spock.
Right, just fired in. So, I mean, the more you think about it, it's just kind of his reason for needing to maneuver the Nexus to hit that planet that he's going to be on doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. It's not. Yeah, I don't have anything else to say about that, because you pretty much summed that up. I mean, it is kind of silly.
Yeah.
It's, So would you, so if you're changing the Nexus into it, so would you, how would you change the mechanics of getting into the Nexus?
I don't know. I think you might just need to have a different way of doing it. It's just so, it's a little bit too clunky. Actually, to have a big space ribbon that's just flying around.
I mean, maybe this is, you know, obviously this is, you know, well past the point where any of this matters, but they could have done something like what if they had him steal the Enterprise?
Right.
And then they could have said something like, oh, well, a tiny ship can't do it, but, a Galaxy-class ship could do it.
Yep.
You know, that's why Kirk managed to get sucked in when he was on the Enterprise.
Oh, right, sure. He needs a ship of big enough scale and power to be able to do something.
So yeah, so that way you could actually get Kirk onto the Enterprise.
Right.
That's what they should have done, because that way you've got the Klingons fighting the Enterprise, blowing the Enterprise up to the point where they have to detach the saucer section, and then Kirk has to stay behind to stop Soren, and Kirk goes down with the Enterprise. That's the way it should be.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a better way about going about things. I kind of like the bones of the movie. I just don't...
Yeah.
What they're trying to do, I respect the fact that they're trying to hand off the things, and in terms of being a handoff, I think it's actually a pretty good movie if you only care about... This is the TOS crew handing off the reins to the TNG crew.
Yeah, I think so too.
At a meta level, the time travel aspect works there too. You know, it's like time is passing us by. Here's the new crew that you have to deal with.
Right.
I think that it's just like starting from the very beginning. I think the movie looks terrible. Like, it's like an awful looking movie for a lot of technical reasons.
Well, I was thinking, the thing that kind of threw me off was seeing movie style lighting on the TNG, like the TV show sets.
Yeah.
And I actually didn't hate it. I thought they did some kind of cool stuff where, like, they had that nice sort of sunlight, like,
intense
dusk
forward.
Sunlight coming through. Yeah, that scene was kind of cool. I think they probably went overboard with it a little bit. There's a lot of dark shadows just highlighting the face and stuff. And it's like, this is the Enterprise. There's lots of lights on this ship.
I feel like it's too obvious to me that it's underlit. Like it's just clearly underlit as opposed to they lit it for this scene. I like the stuff like the light coming through the windows and everything, but it feels to me like they just turned the lights down a little bit and the set isn't designed for that kind of stuff.
That might be part of it is working with that set might have hamstrung them a little bit. I know the guy that shot it was the DP. He's a famous guy. He did like Chinatown and some other pretty big movies. So he knows what he's doing.
Yes. But I think it's the set is not designed to really look like that. And it kind of answers our question we had from the previous movies about whether or not you need to update the bridge. You clearly do just to make it look better. Although we don't spend a lot of time on the bridge of the
Enterprise.
Yeah, I really
don't. You spend more time in like the engine room almost than I think you do on the bridge.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, so we can start at the beginning. What do you think of the TOS introduction scene?
I liked it. I liked the meat of it. I was kind of thrown off by all of those reporters because that seemed very out of place.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something they've ever done in Star Trek before, and it seemed kind of weird. I thought the stuff with the actual TOS crew was good. Like I thought, Kirk being very antsy on the bridge was good. Meeting Sulu's daughter was nice. Scotty and Chekhov had some good lines.
Yeah. When Kirk says "take us out" and Scotty says "it brought a tear to me," I think that's probably the best joke that the Next Generation has ever done.
Like even that whole, I really liked that whole thing because like the patronizing aspect of everybody giving him like a round of applause for saying "take us out" and like just the way he reacts to it, I thought that was really good. I liked that a lot.
I thought Shatner plays it well. I thought it was written well. I think the captain of the Enterprise, B, whatever his name is a bizarrely weak link that I don't know. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't that guy just get killed immediately? you know, and Kirk assumes command.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, because he's going so far out of his way to, you know, he's actively trying to pass the torch on even to this, you know, dipshit.
Yeah. Right. yeah.
The one problem I do have with that sequence, though, is Kirk is absolutely the last person who should be going down to fix that problem, because why he shouldn't know how that ship works.
Sure, yeah.
Why would he know how the glowy cards are? why would he know the order at which he needs to change them to do whatever he's doing on a brand new ship that he is not the captain of, that is his first time on the ship? Yeah, he shouldn't know how to do that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
So if they had, I buy it. I guess I buy it just because it's the motivation is, you know, no, the captain needs to stay on the bridge. I'll go do it. But it should have been like the captain needs to stay on the bridge. Sulu goes and does it. Or someone who makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I think Scotty would be the one. Although Scotty's already gone back in time, so we know that he can't or gone forward, waited in time, and gone to the next generation in the episode. So, I agree. I think that the TOS stuff sort of stands on its own pretty well. I remember when I was younger not particularly liking it, but I think it's much better now than a lot of the other stuff. I think the actors play them really well. Kirk seems to be at a good point in his life. They wrote him like appropriately ready to hand things over, yet still wanting to get into it at that point. Like he's a little more reticent than he was before in the previous movies, but he's at a good place, I think, for this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we meet the Elorian refugees, which is Guinan.
And Vasquez from Aliens is one of the people running the ship on the Enterprise.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah. They cut to her once. She's up at like the communications desk or something.
Oh, yeah. There's also Tuvok from Voyager is in the back for some reason. And then it jumps to the TNG stuff. I like the opening credits with the champagne bottle going across. That's kind of nice. And then we just get into the TNG stuff. And I guess we'll spend most of it on TNG because the TOS crew is really just Kirk, who gets added in later outside of this first scene, and then he gets a scene at the end. But we're back with the TNG crew.
I do want to say I would love to see the sequel that focuses entirely on the captain of the Enterprise B leading up to when he hangs himself because he's been dealing with an entire life as the guy who got Captain Kirk killed.
He certainly can't go on to bigger and better things, I don't think, at that point. The B is the ship I think we know the least about, too, so it's interesting. That,
yeah, it's just the Excelsior.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is, and he sort of fades into the distance. But we're back with the TNG crew. And I don't think that this movie does as good a job. Well, I think it does equally as good a job as TOS did involving all the characters in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the movie does anything except for sort of default to Picard as the lead. And I don't know if Picard deserves to be the lead of this movie. They try to do it through the death of his family and everything, but it's Picard. They insert a Data subplot, and then everyone else is pretty tertiary, I thought, which is disappointing.
Yeah, I think not to harp on this too much, but I mean, I just would have loved to see Kirk interact with like Riker,
right? Yeah,
or Data. I would love to see him interact with Data,
right? Yeah. Why did they do this stuff? It's
I don't know.
It's bizarre to me.
I think it must have been the kind of thing where it's like, well, if we have him on the ship, then people are going to know he didn't die 80 years ago or whatever. But it's like, who cares? You know, it's like, bring him on the ship. Everyone's like, holy shit, it's fucking Captain Kirk. And then he dies at the end. Like, well, that was weird. Let's just never talk about that again.
Right.
You know, there's no reason why you couldn't have done it. I don't know.
It's also the fact that they don't really get to know each other over the course of this movie. You know, like Picard knows him by reputation, but it's not like he should feel super sad about this person because he hasn't gotten to know him over the course of the entire running time. He's really just been like, oh, Kirk wasn't dead. Oh, now he is dead. So not a lot changes for Picard's perspective. It's more just the obviousness of it's sending Kirk off for the audience more than anything. And I don't understand why they wouldn't bring Kirk onto the ship, why he wouldn't interact with those people. I feel I don't really understand this movie. This movie has so little interaction between the crew members of the TNG crew.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Like,
yeah, they really, really does.
Geordi and Data talk to each other when they make their incredibly quick decision to give Data the emotion chip, which we'll get into. But
yeah,
outside of that, Picard is separated almost immediately. Yep. Geordi's kidnapped.
Yeah.
Crusher has one scene, I think, in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
Riker is there as sort of a fallback in Troy when they crash the ship and everything like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I will say Riker gets top five Riker commands to fire, I think, in this movie. It's really good. I'm a big fan.
You can check out my upcoming video about top five times Riker said to fire.
I'm surprised you haven't done that video, actually.
But yeah, I think that, I don't know, you sound less disappointed by this movie than I am. And going into it, a lot of people were like, oh, God, Generations, it's going to be really bad. You're going to rue the day you decided to rewatch that. And I was like, you know what? It's not going to be that bad. I do think this is one of the weaker Star Trek movies across all of them.
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like a curtain call to me, you know? It's like, it feels like at the end of the play, the cast from both movies came out and took a bow. You know, I find enjoyable. I don't know if I would really go back and watch it very often, but I didn't find it, you know, like, offensive.
Right, yeah.
I would say it's one of the weaker ones, but I don't know. I don't know if it's nostalgia or what it is, but it's something is stopping me from being like, this is just a bad movie.
Sure. What do you enjoy about it? Just the fact that it's the sort of send-off film for all of them?
I guess. I mean, I'm a sucker for you know, I've said this in the past. I'm a sucker for alternate timelines and crossovers and stuff like that. So the fact that they did it, I enjoy. You know, it was nice to see the TNG cast again. And yeah, it just kind of felt like an episode. It felt like an episode of the show, and it didn't really push me either way. Like, it felt like one of those episodes of TNG where I was like, yeah, it was fine.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can't think of anything that's explicitly terrible about it, from my point of view anyway.
Sure. It's
kind of clunky, and it's not like the best use of their resources, except for that one shot of when he's fallen down the hill. I can't really think of anything that's explicitly like that. I mean, it's definitely a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
I think, but like, as far as this stuff goes, it's fine.
I don't
know. It's, yeah, I don't mind this movie.
Yeah. I think it's the whole sort of, it feels very thrown together to me.
Yeah.
In a lot of, like, the fact that the uniforms aren't consistent, and that's just like this, like,
I actually really like that.
Oh, you like the fact that they're wearing different stuff. Like, they're wearing the old TNG stuff. At a certain point, some characters start switching into the early season DS9 outfits.
Yeah.
Riker's.
I thought it was interesting because when they started up, excuse me. I noticed that they had the TV costumes, but they had the updated pins.
Yeah.
I was like, that's kind of a weird choice. But then as it kept going, they, like, the first shot on the bridge, one person's wearing the DS9 uniform. But then as it goes on, like, every time one of the main characters has, like, a big emotional scene, the next time you see them, they're wearing the DS9 uniform.
Yes, yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, so they're like, easing you into the uniform change or something, but not everybody changes? I don't know. I love that uniform. I love the color on top uniform, so I didn't mind it. But it stood out to me as kind of weird that they were doing that.
You like the Deep Space Nine uniform, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
what did I
okay,
say?
Yeah. I like the Deep Space Nine eventually changes it to the outer thing is all the same color, and their rank is determined by the, like, turtleneck that they wear underneath.
Oh,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a little bit better than making the color so obvious. But, I mean, I feel like it just kind of piles onto me on, like, a technical level. I don't think this is a very good movie. And it's weird to me that when they made this movie, and they made the TOS is kind of the same way, they didn't just go out. They got, like, David Carson to direct it. David Carson had, like, directed the pilot of DS9. Like, that's his, like, intro to the Trek universe, I think.
I can only assume it must have been because Rob Bowman was busy or something, because I don't know why he wasn't directing this movie.
Right. I mean, it's why you'd think they'd be able to get someone a little bit higher prestige. The movie to me looks like a TV show, which I don't think is impressive. And like on a technical level, I don't think there's anything outside of maybe a couple of the Nexus special effects that really holds up and looks good at this point.
The crash of the Enterprise, I thought looked all right.
Oh, you like that too? To me, it feels...
I didn't think it was terrible. I didn't think it was amazing, but I thought it looked better than I thought it would.
Okay, yeah. I just think that it felt like they basically had the money to hire a better stuntman. There's one stuntman who goes like over the wharf console, and he gets some real air yes. when he goes over that thing.
Well, there's that one shot when they blow up the Klingon ship, where they have like this quick shot of what looks like someone getting sucked into space.
Yeah.
Like, inside the ship, there's this, like, really dramatic, like, horizontal, like, sucking slide of one of the Klingons, like, into an explosion.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that was kind of cool, but that was, yeah, that was about it.
And, I mean, the whole technical aspect of it, it's just the way it's lit, the way it looks, the costuming that they're wearing, it all just feels very sloppy in a lot of ways, and it doesn't feel as tight as the TOS movies did in terms of their aesthetic and everything like that.
Which I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, it does feel like, and from the stuff that I've seen on like the special features and stuff, it was like, it seems like they tore everything down like the day they were done with this movie.
Yeah.
It seems like they did it to get a movie out of the sets and everything. And then after that, it was just like, all right, fuck it.
Right. They needed to get to the new Enterprise basically in a lot of ways. And it takes this movie to do it. Do you feel that this Enterprise destruction is better or worse than the original Enterprise's destruction?
Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate the detaching of the saucer thing because it's nice that it went out the way it came in.
Mm-hmm.
And this time it actually makes sense instead of just doing it to show that they can do it.
Yeah.
But even so, like, after they do it, it's just like, there's not really any weight to it. It's just like the carburetor blew on the engine and it just blows up.
Yeah.
Wherever it is. The radiation leak, and then it just... I don't know. It's not as... It doesn't have the same gravitas to it than it did in Star Trek III.
I just...
Is it three? Three is the first time they blow it up.
Yeah,
right?
Search for Spock is when they blow up. I feel that the destruction of the Enterprise is kind of a big deal here for a couple of reasons. One, it's the end of a plot line that takes up a good portion of the running time up to that mm-hmm. point, where the Geordi abduction leads to something.
Yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure what the point of that abduction was and why the Klingons need to destroy the Enterprise.
Or why the Klingons are in this movie at all.
Why they're, and that ties into that. Like, Sorin needs them to shuttle him around, basically, seems to be one of the things. I don't understand why they have to do that, why he can't just get a little shuttlecraft or something. But Geordi getting abducted and then having him unknowingly lead to the Enterprise's destruction, which leads to this incredibly unsatisfying thing for me where the other ship is just taking pot shots at it and they can't defend themselves at all.
Yeah.
And it feels really lame that this thing is just going to be basically taken down by this ancient ship because it can't defend itself in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that whole thing is kind of a very unsatisfying plot thread. Like, that's another reason why I think they should have had more stuff happen on the Enterprise,
because
then that makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, I don't know, having those Klingons there at all, like... After watching the series and seeing what a big deal rogue Klingons like that are, they kind of just sort of brush them under the rug in this movie.
They do, yeah. Yeah.
Especially those specific ones who have shown up before.
Right. Yeah, it's been since reunification, whatever, the that Klingon Civil War episode is when those guys were introduced. And they show up here. And it just, yeah, it doesn't, it's like, it's one of those things that's nice to have, like, the callback or whatever, but I don't care. You don't deal with them enough to make them important. You wouldn't say that they're, like, a major character in the movie in any shape or form. Like, they're not Sorin. They're not the main villains. They're not...
Like, why not instead of having this, like, you know, stupid thing where he's giving them a trilithium bomb or whatever for nondescript reasons, why not have him like, sell the Klingons on why they would also want to go into the Nexus.
Right.
So, like, he's using them to get there.
Yep.
And then, you know, I guess in this case, I'm thinking if in your version of the Nexus where it was more like a time travel thing.
Yeah.
In which case, you know, and then at some point either the ship isn't strong enough or he double-crosses them or something because he realizes he needs to get to the Enterprise or something like that.
I think it's – I would like to spend a few minutes on Soren just because I think he's a – huge wasted character. I don't know if he's written correctly at all in any way, shape, or form. What'd you think of Soren? What'd you think of the performance? What did you think of his, like, purpose? What did you think of him as a villain, I guess?
Yeah.
Just there?
Yeah. I don't know.
I like the performance, I think.
Yeah, he's good. I mean, Malcolm McDowell is always good.
Yeah.
Sometimes he's a little over the top, but, you know, those guys know how to go over the top and have it be watchable.
Yes.
He's not really, he's not really much of a character at all, really.
I mean, how does he not have a single scene with Guinan? You know?
That's a good point.
I don't understand why, when they see each other at the bar, they wouldn't have a short conversation about things.
Well, they don't actually see each other, though.
She sees him, right?
No, he sees her.
Oh.
But she doesn't see him.
She senses him or something. She gives
Highlander sense.
A recognition, a face of recognition or something. But I don't...
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. What's the name of the planet that Guinan's from?
Her people are called Elorians.
Are the Elorians the native people of the planet Zeist?
Oh, maybe...
Because they do live a very long time.
They do.
And they do seem to be able to sense when each other are near.
Yep. Yep. And there is the Nexus is just the biggest quickening of all
time. I think you just connected that final dot for me, and this movie just got a whole lot better.
This is why it's the greatest. No, they're Elorians, which is a play on the fact that they're called listeners, which McDowell... mentions. It's just another thing of, like, the sloppy. I feel like the movie's just a bunch of sloppy stuff. Like, if he's of her race, how is his sort of listening thing not played up more? He has the little throwaway line about, like, oh, Geordi, like, you have my undivided attention or whatever. But that race has been sold to us as kind of a wizened, like, advice culture. And... He doesn't feel like he fits into anything like that at all. Like, I feel like there's a lot of ways you could write him to make him fit all of these different things that the movie seems to want him to fit, but he actually doesn't come out that way.
Yeah, he just kind of comes off as like a mad scientist.
Yeah, generic mad scientist.
Kind of like a drug addict almost.
Yeah, just who he needs his fix to get back to back to that thing. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like Soren's point is missed the entire time, and he's...
And to be fair, like, well, I guess not to be fair, because I guess he does some bad stuff, but, like, he doesn't do, he's not as big of a villain as you would hope he would be for being the guy who ostensibly kills Captain Kirk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, he's just sort of, yeah, he's going to blow up a star, he's going to kill an entire planet of people or whatever, but he hasn't done a lot of actively malicious stuff.
Right.
He's done, like, one or two things, but nothing that's, like, really... I don't know. I feel like that the fist fight at the end should have a little bit more oomph to it,
right,
instead of just, you know, long shots of stuntmen.
It is long shots of stuntmen. It might be the oldest cumulative fight scene, too, with just the age of everybody who's having fisticuffs. And Picard just gets knocked on his ass so many times in this movie. Just he's rolling down mountains after getting punched and stuff. I feel no one really particularly comes out of it looking like they're on top of anything.
And to speak to what you're saying about it just not looking very good, I was watching the special features on the Blu-ray, and they had one of those, like, shot at the time behind the scenes things, and they were talking to Picard or Patrick Stewart when they were on location where they shot that whole final sequence, and he's like, you know, usually we would just go out to the whatever canyon that's 5 minutes from the Paramount lot to shoot stuff like this, but clearly you can see the scope of this movie is much larger, that we've come all the way out to Nevada to shoot here. And it's like, dude, I I just assumed they shot it at the place they usually shoot it, because all of the shots that they use are like super tight shots on the rocks, and I just figured it was the same place they shot the arena episode,
right,
of the original series.
That same, not just arena, they shot like a bunch of desert planet stuff at that site.
Yeah,
they don't. Well, I think it's just the eye of the director here, right? Like, he shoots it like a TV show. There's no sweeping vista views or anything, or like framing them. You know, the bridge isn't like framed dramatically in the shot with like blue sky around them, like representing the vastness of anything. It's all just very, it's all very tight, shitty, and it's just like old men running around on the mountain, which is not particularly exciting and not what I want to
see. Yeah. I remember as a kid not really understanding why that whole climax is not very good. I understand it now, because it's not good. if I will say, as far as a TV episode goes, it's whatever. It's what I would expect from an episode of TNG.
Yeah.
But as far as a movie goes, the climax of this movie is, I will say, is terrible. Yep. It's just bad.
Yeah.
It's
you would consider the climax to be when they escape from the Nexus.
Yeah, that whole sequence on the desert planet or whatever is just no good.
No,
I don't know what else you do there, but it's.
Well, I mean, the reason I think that it's bad is that it's so generically bland. It's like, you know, Picard is stuck by a force field. He can't get to the missile. The guy's launching literally a missile at the sun.
Yeah.
And they're just.
It feels super cheap.
Yeah, it feels super cheap, super uninvolved for like the vastness of what Sorn is trying to do. It's a very simplistic thing that he has to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it ends up in just kind of a fist fight. I think that they didn't even really do anything clever with the climax and the fact that, you know, Picard and Kirk come back, right? And they're like, we're going to take out Sorin. And Kirk's like, I'll go punch him in the face. And Picard says, okay. And Kirk goes off to fight him. And you're like, okay, that's kind of fitting of the character. And then Picard just apparently has nothing better to do. He comes over and also wants to punch Sorin in the face.
Yeah, he really changes the plan very quickly there.
And then they just go back to those two fighting. But, like, would you have rather Kirk go out being the fist fighter, or would you have rather they subverted the roles and had Picard have to do the Kirk role and Kirk have to do the Picard role?
I want him on the fucking ship.
You want him on the ship, okay.
Yes. I mean, to a certain extent, I was thinking, all right, this kind of makes sense that Kirk would go out fist fighting, because that's the, you know, the way people remember him for some reason. But, you know, it's like, after all of this time, after all of these movies where he, to not have his final stand be like staring down whatever death is from the bridge of the Enterprise is really a bummer. It's a bummer.
It is a bummer, yeah.
You know, even if it's, I mean, I know they're detaching the thing, so if, you know, he couldn't stare it down from the bridge, but they have the battle bridge on the rest of the ship or something, right?
Yep, they do.
Yeah, have them do it from there.
Yeah, I feel that the ending up to Kirk's death is disappointing. It doesn't. If I was a bigger fan of TOS, I'd be more upset by it. Whereas I'm not a huge fan of TOS, so it's kind of just like, well, they kind of missed the boat on that one. Like that Kirk, that character did not get a good death. It feels.
Yeah, but it's like the way that's stupid. Like he's just. It's almost like you can see them forgetting to finish writing him, or so, you know,
right,
it's like he splits off, he gets that thing, and then he just falls off screen.
Yeah,
and it's like they were like, and then Kirk dies, and they didn't figure out how to do it until the day they were there to shoot, and they're like, oh shit, what the hell do we do?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's so low stakes and silly. Like he has to jump onto the bridge to get the remote control. Basically,
yeah.
It's like, is there a less romantic way that this guy could go out than what we've set him up
also,
to do?
Also, this is not directly related to that, but kind of. They send Picard down to the planet for whatever reason, because that's where Sorin goes.
You're talking about earlier in the movie.
Earlier in the movie. Yep. Why can't the Enterprise use their scanning technology to find out where Sorin is and just pepper the shit out of him with photon torpedoes or something?
Yes, that's
like even if they have like a 100-mile radius of where he might be,
they
already established that there's nobody on that planet.
Yes,
they should just light that thing up.
Oh, well, actually, no, there must be people on that planet, right? There's 230 million.
No, that was the other planet. That was the next planet next door that was going to get blown up if he blows up the star.
Oh, he's not even on that planet?
No.
Oh, okay. Nope. He's on his own.
He's on an uninhabited planet, like, you know, two doors
down. Oh, that's right. They do make that distinction. I will say that is one scene that I like, and I wish they used that set more, the stellar cartography set.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that.
It's pretty neat. It's like a good way to show you how many stars are in the universe in a kind of interesting way, and sort of
shades of Cerebro from the X-Men.
Yes, it is very much Cerebro. The problem with that scene, and I guess we'll talk about this now. A scattershot kind of feeling conversation, but I feel like the movie's just scattershot. So
yeah,
that scene is ruined to me because the interaction between Data and Picard is so fucking terrible that I can't believe it's happening. And that leads us into the Data storyline here.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts about Data, his emotions, and his storyline?
It seemed like something that they needed to do to fill time and to give Brent Spiner a reason to do the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's basically a big nothing for me. Like, I don't really care. It's fine. Whatever. I wish they had found a way to tie it in thematically to what they were talking about, because they really don't.
No. It exists totally on the periphery of this movie.
Yeah, there's really no reason to do it other than the fact that, I don't know, something to do.
Yeah, it gets Geordi captured.
Basically.
It gets Geordi captured, but there's not really any kind of ramifications of that, because in the cartography thing, that's where Data's upset, saying, like, I can't do this. I can't do this. I'm too scared or whatever. And Picard says, do it. And he says, okay, I'll do it. And he sits down and just does his job for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
There's no feedback over the emotional aspect of it. And to me, I've mentioned this before, but it's like, it's a huge betrayal of the Data character, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. It takes everything that makes the character interesting and just throws it out the window so that Spiner can play like a hammy, terrible comedian role.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest betrayal is at the end when he doesn't take it out.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that he's just like, no, I've got it under control. I'm just like this now.
And especially how they deal with it going forward.
I don't even remember. Does it come into play in the following movies?
Yes. In First Contact,
he just turns
it off. He can just turn it off and say, I don't want to feel emotions now.
Until the Borg Queen gives him a boner.
Yep. So, I mean... To me, I really don't like that Data storyline on almost any level. Like, if you're going to give him emotion, it would work better in the First Contact storyline. Like, that would make more sense. It doesn't tie into the thematic point of this movie. Spiner almost seems to me maliciously intent on ruining the character in a lot of ways there. The scene with him and Geordi is just, it's awful. I remember thinking it was awful when I was younger. It's awful to watch now. Geordi not saying, stop being a douchebag, is kind of a weird thing that he doesn't give more of, like, Data, will you stop just jerking around to, like, get something done?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about the...
Mr. Tricorder scene?
Oh, yeah.
When they're sort of in Sorn's lab before they get kidnapped.
Yes,
or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not great.
Open sesame. It's like, this is just awful, awful stuff.
Now, see, why does having emotions make him understand
jokes?
All of the jokes that he never got before. Right. Or sayings that he never understood before.
Yeah. Well, emotions are complicated things, and they kind of pile up on you. Yeah, I don't like anything.
I would have liked it if at some point he was like, guys, do you remember Tasha Yar? She was fine. I totally hit that.
And I can remember why I should be happy about that.
That's the data angle.
I don't know. Why do you think this conversation is so disjointed? Why do you think I'm having trouble?
I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because this movie, in its own contained moviness, is... a bridge movie to in bridging the old crew and the new crew, but it is also a bridge movie to get us from Star Trek VI to what we all came to see, which is First Contact.
Yeah.
So we're just crossing that bridge, man.
Just killing time.
Yeah, we're just changing radio stations, seeing what's on.
Well,
paying the toll, and then once we get over to the other side, we're in the Holland Tunnel.
I'll jump to the other side, grab the little remote control, and push the button just in time to make that invisible thing not invisible anymore. Yeah, watching it this time, did you feel any sort of difference of opinion in how Kirk's death is handled? Like, is this, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you consider this to be Kirk's signing off as? You know what I mean? Like, in
general for the character?
In terms of, yeah, just like if you were to see all the spectrums of the way that a Kirk death could go, where would this sort of land on that spectrum?
This would be like a 2 if 1 is like they found him autoerotic asphyxiated. Like,
I was going to say he dies like Elvis or something, like on the toilet.
I mean, like I said, I like the scene. I think Shatner's performance is good, but man, come on. It's like he slipped on a banana peel and hit his head in a sink or something.
It's funny because the two writers are big TOS fans. I don't really understand how this is how you determine for this guy to get out of here.
Yeah, I wonder if it has. So I was thinking about that too, because like, say you do put him on the ship and he does go down with the ship, right? That really doesn't afford him, unless he's mortally wounded or something, it doesn't really afford him the opportunity to have a quote-unquote death scene.
Right.
And I could see that being a sticking point for Shatner.
Oh, like, maybe.
I want to have a death scene. I don't want to just blow up on the ship.
Sure.
I think there's ways you could have done it. But, I mean, if he wants to have, like, the light goes out of his eyes, you know.
Right.
You know, head cocks to the side, death scene.
Yep.
You're not going to get that piloting the ship into the stars or whatever, you know?
Right, yeah.
So I could see maybe that being a reason. So that's what I mean. Like, the trouble with stuff like this is you have to cater to so many different things. Like, you could have the best idea in the world, but if one of your principal actors is like, nah, I don't really want to do that. I'd rather ride a horse for 15 minutes.
Yes.
Like, well, fuck, how the hell do I have him ride a horse? I will say Shatner's horse work is very good.
That is his horse.
Is it?
Yes,
okay. Because the way that he sidesteps that horse, I was like, holy shit, I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, he's that was filmed on his ranch, and that is his horse. So it explains
why
he's comfortable.
Yeah, okay, that explains a lot. That's like Harrison Ford being like, yeah, I'll do it if I can wear my own clothes and fly my own plane.
Right, fly my own plane. He's been in a couple plane crashes at this point, hasn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be the best pilot. I do have a couple of friends of mine do have a running theory that in the new Blade Runner movie, he is just wearing the clothes he wore to set.
Yeah.
Because he seems just to be wearing a gray t-shirt the entire time and, like, jeans. And I'm sure that they came to him and were like, so we have this awesome jacket. And he's like, no, I'm going to wear just what I'm wearing now. like, sure, whatever you want.
You're the star. You get it done. I guess before we sign off, we haven't talked at all about the Nexus. I mean, the scenes inside the Nexus.
Mm-hmm.
I see very little positive about it. The mechanics of it make no sense. I don't understand how you can just jump into other people's fantasies on a whim.
Who knows? I don't know.
Guinan being there, she sort of hand waves and says, yeah, just think of me as an echo. I'm not really a real
person.
Which
doesn't make any sense because she's... The stuff that she tells him actually breaks the story, breaks the climax of the movie.
Okay.
Because he says to her, he's like, oh, hey, what's going on? And, well, I thought you were on the Enterprise. She's like, well, I am on the Enterprise, but I'm also here. I'm an echo of my former self. He's like, okay, well, why don't you also come back to help me? And she's like, I can't do that because I'm also on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Like, well, Picard's also on the fucking planet.
Right.
How do you...
yeah.
Where... So you've just shattered the logic of
where you exist in this thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like I said, the Nexus is super, super clunky, but whatever. It does its job.
Yeah.
You learn Picard apparently has a thing for redheads.
Yes.
I guess.
Yep. And I there's little things. Like when he goes back, right, and he's in his fantasy world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole movie has been focused on his nephew, Renee. has died, mm-hmm. right? He sees Renee in the fantasy of the Nexus. And when he leaves his house and one of the kids is like, are you coming to dinner with us? It's not fucking Renee. Like, why is it not Renee that he's talking to at that point? You know what I mean?
Good point. Yeah.
Like, why bring us through this entire thing of not doing it and then not have Picard tell the person that he's the ghost of the person he's chasing after that I need to leave you now?
100%.
It's totally bizarre. And then he goes into Kirk's thing, and Kirk's thing is actually interesting because
actually, if that was the accurate thing for Picard, it would have been Renee being like, I'm so glad to see you, Uncle, because my father's such a deadbeat and I hate him. You're so much better than he is.
I love Starfleet. He doesn't like Starfleet at all.
Wine is dumb.
And then they jump to Kirk's thing. Kirk's thing feels more appropriate for the character, mm-hmm. especially because we've seen him, the fact that he likes to go camping in Yosemite and everything.
Yeah.
It's also good for the geeks because his shelf is...
I wish Picard had showed up on rocket boots.
Just sort of flown in. It's good for the fans of the series because his mantle is basically a who's who collection of props from previous movies.
Oh, right. Yep.
Which is cool. We meet a woman that I don't think we've ever met before. We don't meet her, but we hear about a woman that he's going to marry.
I thought for a second when we heard her voice, I thought she might have been the girl from Star Trek IV.
Oh, yeah.
But it's clearly not.
No. And then Kirk's thing is stronger to me because it at least approaches the topic that I was talking about before, where Kirk seems to be in a realistic representation of something that actually happened to him.
Yeah, he is actually back at a certain point in his life.
Yes, which Picard is not, which makes... I don't know if that's the argument, is that's why Picard can see through it easier than Kirk does.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also realizes that glowing Christmas tree ornaments aren't real or something.
What is that explosion representing?
I don't know. I thought
it was the Nexus, but it's not the Nexus.
I don't know.
It's is it the ship blowing? Has the ship blown up at that point?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because the after the Nexus hits them.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they've crashed.
The whole planet blows up.
Yeah, that's right. That was a good scene. I will say that is a good thing to see. When the ship is on the surface of the planet, it gets blown up. But the Kirk thing, that's the way I would have wanted it to go. It jumps into the whole other thing of you can just apparently jump between scenes in the Nexus, and it doesn't mean anything. And you can go riding horses and stuff. And even them getting out of the Nexus is ridiculous. They just decide to leave, and that's all you have to do.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lick of sense.
And you can go back to any time you want, but apparently they want to go just before Soren does this instead of 2 hours before, when they could have just punched Soren in the face and thrown him off the ship.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no parameters on that or anything. There's no reason why they couldn't have just gone back like a couple days.
Yeah.
You know,
I would have gone back to the scene where he meets Soren in 10 Forward, right? That's the scene where you just say, all right, fuck this guy. Get him out of here. He's no good.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know. I think we're done talking about Generations, though. I'm surprised because you seem to respond to it well, but you don't seem to have a lot of points in its favor, I guess.
No, I don't know how to explain it. It's very much a bridge movie for me.
Sure.
Like, it's like an encore, you know? It literally is. It's literally an encore movie.
Do you consider it to be more a TOS movie than a TNG movie then at that point?
No.
No? Okay.
No, I mean it's an encore for everybody.
Okay.
Like, it's an encore for the original crew. I think it's an encore for the...
the show. I see what you mean.
For the show. Because, you know, it's the last you're going to see of the original TNG bridge before everybody just starts, you know, playing guitar solos for 90 minutes in the next movie, which I can't wait for.
Yep.
I mean metaphorical guitar solos, but it's very much like I think it does its job. I should say it does part of its job. It does its job in that it passes the torch on to the next thing. It fails in that in the torch passing, they catch somebody on fire as they're handing the torch off.
And then he falls off a bridge.
Not to continue with my Highlander analogies here, around this time, I think maybe a couple years later, was Highlander Endgame, where they bridge the Highlander movies and the Highlander TV show.
Yes.
And say what you want about that movie. It's not super great. But what they do execute very well is the literal passing of the torch, where the plot of the movie is there's this one immortal who's basically he's put a gang together, and they hunt down and kill other immortals, but only he gets to kill the immortals, so he gets to take all the power. And so he's like the most powerful immortal ever. He's got like three times as many kills as anybody else in history. And Connor and Duncan are teaming up because he hates Connor for, you know, reasons I won't get into. And at a certain point, like, they're like, we have to both fight this guy. We can't beat him alone. But the rules obviously state that it's only a one-on-one battle. So Connor makes the decision that, you're right, we can't defeat him on our own. We have to do it together. And then they have a sword fight, and Duncan kills Connor.
Yep.
And takes all of his power. And it's fucking great. It's sad. If you love those characters, it's like, this is the way it had to be.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, even right before it happens, you know, Duncan doesn't want to do it, and I think it's a great scene. I think it's good. I think it was a great, you know, passing of the torch. And then later on, not that I'm going to continue to geek out about Highlander on the Star Trek podcast. Later on, when he's fighting the guy at the end, Duncan starts like shit talking the guy, and as he's talking, his voice like turns into Connor's voice. So like they do it really well. It was a really, really well executed way to do that.
Yep.
Here, not so much.
Long story short, here this is not very effective.
Long story short, watch the last half an hour of Highlander Endgame instead.
Let me know what you think about this. They decided to reshoot Kirk's death for this movie. Okay. Originally, he was shot and killed by Soren, but it was felt by test audiences that this was not a fitting death for such a character. What? These are the two options we had? Like, these are the two things that you motherfuckers could come up with? He gets shot or he falls off a bridge? I don't know.
It would be better if he had gotten his belt loop stuck to the rocket, right, and the rocket, like, just shot off into the star with him attached to it, but his weight put it off course, and, like, he ended up crashing into a mountain and blowing up.
So, like, Soren manages to launch the rocket in both timelines, except Kirk is just belted to it in one, and he's... I would find that to be a better take on poor Captain Kirk. Yeah, I feel bad. I'm just going to sum up my feelings about Generations, which is I do understand what you're saying about it. It's like it is a bridge movie. I think it's extremely poorly made. I think that something that always bugs me about these things, as I've mentioned many times, is that I'm big on plot stuff in movies and TV.
Yeah.
And the plot here just makes no sense. You can have a plot that is not perfectly paint by numbers, but you have to kind of leave it open-ended enough where you don't need to... There's too much information for how bad the plot is here, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I'll agree with
so
that.
So that's a big thing for me. I think it just looks sloppy. The lighting doesn't look good. Riker is wearing someone else's uniform at the end because he's so poorly fitting into that uniform that it's ridiculous. And then the whole kind of... When Picard and Riker are at the very end picking up the ready room, like on the crashed saucer section, mm-hmm. Picard picks up a thing and he's like sorting out his stuff. He picks up something and he like throws it on the ground next to him.
Yep.
That thing is from an episode where that is like apparently one of the rarest things in the universe and someone gives it to him as a gift and mm-hmm. he's enthralled by it. And at the end of this movie, he just picks it up and throws it on the ground. And it's like there's no sort of it's fitting of the kind of like respect I feel that the movie is taking for the audience member, I guess, at a point here.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's just it doesn't feel I watching it this past time really sort of let me down to the movie, like because I was watching it more critically, I guess you'd say, as opposed to just having it on in the background. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's a very good background movie. Would you agree with that?
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, my overall feeling is that it's like, I agree with everything you're saying. It feels like the TV show, and I don't mean that in a good way.
Okay.
Like, it felt like an episode of the TV show that I didn't really have to pay attention to.
Right, sure.
And so in that way, it did feel like the TNG that I knew.
Right. Yeah.
However, like, so it didn't have that, you know, the great episodes of TNG really make you take notice of what they're doing, and really engage you. And this just doesn't do that.
Sure.
It's fine. If you like seeing those people in as those characters in those uniforms, then this movie's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're looking for something on the level of, you know, the series finale or Best of Both Worlds or anything like that, even, you know, Yesterday's Enterprise, it's not even close to that.
Yeah. So to wrap this up on my sort of ranking, I would insert this before Final Frontier and Search for Spock. So those would be my bottom three movies so far.
So you like this one less than those two?
No, I would. It's probably a personal opinion, just because I like TNG better. I would put it in front of Final Frontier and Search for Spock. Search for Spock is the worst, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would probably do well. I would definitely put it in front of Final Frontier. Yeah, I guess I probably would put it in front of Search for Spock.
Yeah. Yeah, it sits in that little spot.
It kind of defies ranking, though, because it's just nothing.
Right. Yes, you know? It is nothing. It's for how big it is, it's surprising how little it's about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. It's very sad. But anyway, Clay, thanks for coming on to talk about it.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, we'll be back with First Contact.
Yeah, the only reason I'm here.
Yes.
I thank you for having me, but we all know why I'm here. It's just to get to this point. I'm putting in the work so I can get to First Contact and have nothing constructive to say about it.
Assimilate this. Yeah, so we'll be back with First Contact, which will be the Borg making their feature film debut. We're done with Generations. That's the first of the TNG movies. Thank you guys very much for listening. I'm sorry it took a couple weeks to get this out, but now it's out. We're back on track. And if you guys enjoyed the content, liking the comments on YouTube is appreciated. If you can rate us on iTunes or any of the podcatchers, facebook.com/thepenskypodcast, and then patreon.com/thepenskyfile. You go there a couple dollars a month, you get extra content. We do podcasts, extra stuff. Go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile if you want to support the show. It's much appreciated. All right, that's it. We're done with Star Trek Generations. Any final words, Clay, before we sign off? That's where you say, oh my, or whatever the fuck.
Oh my.
Oh my.
There's got to be a video somewhere where someone recuts that, and when they cut to him, they use the George Takei. Oh my!
am I a bad fan? Is he referencing something that I am not getting?
I don't honestly know.
Okay,
I have no idea.
So you don't watch that scene thinking the oh my is supposed to?
Oh, you mean I thought you were talking about George Takei?
Oh no, I'm talking about Kirk's.
So I actually do know why he says that. I heard Shatner talk about it. It's something along the lines of it's Captain Kirk being presented with the undiscovered country, and it's his reaction to seeing death open up before him. It's like it's what he says as he sees what's coming next. It's just a, you know, quiet oh my.
Okay, so it's just in Shatner's head. There's no
yes.
Nothing else outside of that. Yeah. All right. That would have been nice to tie that into something at the beginning of the movie, maybe.
If he had said, like, take us out.
And Picard would just say it brought a tear to my eye.
Yeah.
All right. I think we're done with Generations. Guys, thank you very much. We'll see you next time.